Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what Jerusalem-based organization has helped to standardize the system of spelling for writing Ladino? Dr. Brian Kirshen is an American linguist who had already studied Hebrew, Spanish, Ancient Greek, and Arabic before discovering Ladino, or Judeo-Spanish, as an MA student at Middlebury College. He was fascinated by the language and has since become committed to helping spread the word about Ladino and perpetuate its legacy. As a PhD student in Los Angeles, he taught weekly workshops and classes in Ladino at the Skirball Cultural Center to college students and community members, and now is at Binghamton University in New York State, where he teaches a freshman course on Judeo-Spanish languages and cultures. He helps to further publicize the language as a program organizer for both the International Day of Ladino celebration as well as International Mother Language Day. In 2012, Kirshen flew to Bosnia to help produce a documentary about the Sephardic community in Sarajevo that had been devastated by the Holocaust, and which tells the amazing story of one man, Morris Albahari, who survived the war thanks to Ladino, his mother tongue. The film, Saved by Language, was co-directed by Susana Zaraisky and was recently screened at Centro Sefarad Israel in Madrid, where we were able to interview Dr. Kirshen about his interest in Judeo-Spanish and his work to preserve it. Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Brian. Could you first tell us how you became interested in Ladino and how you learned it?
Sure. I learned about the Judeo-Spanish language years ago when I was studying right after my undergraduate studies. And I had studied a number of languages such as Spanish and Hebrew and Arabic. And when a professor told me that I might be interested in Judeo-Spanish, I caught on to it right away. I was fascinated by it. I myself am an Ashkenazi Jew, coming from a Yiddish-speaking background with my bubby and whatnot. So this theme or this language and the culture that surrounds it always fascinated me as an extension of my, my culture.
But how did you learn it? I mean, did you learn it on your own or were there classes?
Sure. So when I became fully interested in it, I was a graduate student at UCLA in Los Angeles. And even though there was a Sephardic community, and is a large Sephardic community in Los Angeles, a Judeo-Spanish speaking one, they weren't necessarily working in collaboration with the university. So at that point, I was a graduate student in the Spanish and Portuguese department, and I rounded up some other students and told them about Judeo-Spanish, and they were interested, and we just started meeting every week. We formed a student group, so that way the university would recognize us, and we called it UC Ladino, a play on UCLA and Ladino. And we were sponsored by the university, by the Center for Jewish Studies, by the Department of Spanish and Portuguese, and they liked the fact that we were meeting every week. We bought several textbooks to teach ourselves the language. So we actually started teaching ourselves the language, and we all came from very different linguistic backgrounds. So we started to teach ourselves the language every week, practicing, actually speaking in the language, not just in the classroom, but when we would get coffee with each other or whatnot. And then we started inviting in the community, members of the community, because that's the best way to learn, right? So we started to invite people in, and I would go to the synagogue and different places to get to know who's who, right? Who speaks this language, and how do you find these people? And we worked with them, and several people, served really as our mentors, as our friends, welcoming us into their homes even in many cases. And that way we started to learn, and the language really became an authentic, immersive experience.
You mentioned UC Ladino. Could you tell us a little bit about it? Does it still exist, and what does it do?
Sure. So UC Ladino, again, it's a student organization that I co-founded in 2010 at UCLA, and essentially we started meeting weekly to teach ourselves Judeo-Spanish, different varieties of the language, and it primarily served as a student organization because most organizations are very academic in their approach or not necessarily welcoming to students. And we wanted to encourage undergrads from 18 to graduate students up into 30, 30-something, or whatever the age, to learn about this language and relate it to their studies no matter how. But it was a group, you know, no one received credit for it. Everyone would meet weekly. And then we started to get more creative, and we would invite people in for lectures quarterly, whether it was Vanessa Paloma, or at different points we had Judith Cohn speak. And then we would actually organize an entire conference one day, which grew into a two-day conference and in some ways an international symposia, where we've had people from all over the world, from Eliezer Papo to Karen Chajon to Avner Perez, come in and speak to us about Judeo-Spanish or different varieties of the language. And we really would just embrace different programs. At one point we did a Seder in Passover in Ladino, and just to expose people to this language who had never heard about it.
What is the situation of Ladino in the world? Do you have any idea how many native speakers there still are and where they're located?
Sure. A lot of times I see articles coming out about that exact question, and it's a challenging question to answer because I cannot give a number of speakers just because there is no census for that information. However, there are communities, in quotation marks, of Judeo-Spanish speakers and Sephardim all over. In the United States, obviously, New York City, Los Angeles, and Seattle are some of the largest, but there are communities of Sephardim all over, but in many cases, they're spread out. So in that sense, the people who speak them, the reason for me that it's very hard to answer that question, even though there have been suggestions of tens of thousands to up into 100,000 speakers before in Turkey, only maybe 10 to 15,000, but in Israel, some say up into 100,000. But, you know, to figure that out, everyone has different proficiency levels in the language, and, you know, no one goes around testing these people. So the language comes to them at certain moments.
You mentioned varieties, and since the Jews who were expelled from Spain emigrated to many different places and incorporated elements of the native language into the Judeo-Spanish that they spoke, I imagine that there are many different varieties. And my question to you is, if you know, are these varieties mutually understandable? In other words, would it be like British English, American English, Australian English? Or have they evolved differently, and which might make them harder to understand, like the Arabic that's spoken, for example, in the different countries of North Africa, where a Moroccan who speaks the local dialect won't understand an Egyptian?
Sure. The question is very relevant, especially to a linguist. There are many theories about how this language developed even prior to the expulsion, when Jewish communities lived among non-Jews, speaking the different varieties of, I guess, Ibero-Romance language, with their different elements of words or sayings maybe that pertain to Hebrew or Aramaic in that case. But yes, once they were expelled, and thus all over the either Turkey, the Balkans, or North Africa, each variety kind of developed in its own way, levelized in the theory of linguistics, it would be a koine. But they are mutually intelligible, so that is to say that typically a speaker of Judeo-Spanish in Bosnia would be able to understand a speaker of Judeo-Spanish in Turkey. In certain cases, there might be some lexicon, some words that are used that are different, so maybe some sounds, some of the phonological patterns. I would say that the biggest difference in variety might be between some of the former Ottoman Empire varieties of Judeo-Spanish and that of Hakatia, which is the variety spoken in North Africa, but particularly in Morocco, because that incorporates a lot more of Arabic or even Moroccan Arabic. That variety is not spoken as much today as some of the other varieties, however. So I think, and I've witnessed conversations between speakers of all varieties, and they are very intelligent linguistically as well, because when they get together, oftentimes they know what another speaker might not know. They're aware of some of the lexicon that they use, that this is more Arabic, this is more Turkish, and then they figure it out just based on context. And just like in any language, when we don't understand something, which often happens, we say, can you explain that, or what's that word? And then it often becomes into more than just a word, but just the historical linguistic trajectory.
Because then the next question that comes out of that is that there is a renewed worldwide interest in Ladino and people are studying it. And I'm wondering if, I know there's no academy or anything, but I wonder if someone has established what you might call standard Ladino, which is what they teach everybody, the same way that this has happened with Yiddish, that, you know, there are so many different varieties of Yiddish, but if you study it in a formal situation, you get a kind of a standard Yiddish that probably nobody really, really speaks, but that everybody would understand, and that's what they teach to students.
Yes, so there are universities and groups, and I should note that, as mentioned before, the group UCLA, even though I'm no longer at UCLA as a grad student, now that I'm a professor back on in New York, the group is continues, and now the group is actually led by a Sephardic Jew himself, whose family spoke and speaks the language. But other places, the language is being taught, and it's an interesting question, how do they teach the language and what variety? Oftentimes, if it's a professor whose native language is the language, they'll teach their variety. In other cases, such as my own, I teach the language as well at times, and I use more of a Turkish variety because that's what I'm more familiar with, and actually some of the textbooks are in that language, or that variety of the language. But I should note that there is not an academy, but an authority of Judeo-Spanish. It's La Autoridad Nacional de Ladino, so the National Authority of Ladino, which is based in Jerusalem. And they have helped to standardize an orthography for writing, which was based on a journal that was published for decades called Aki Yerushalayim. And many speakers today, including learners of the language, actually use this standard orthography regardless of their dialect that they speak. And of course, some people aren't familiar with it because you have to come across it, you have to agree with it. The variety that is written in Latin or Roman letters or characters, which is very different from maybe 100 years ago and for centuries when Sephardim would write their language in a cursive variety known as Soletreo. So that was a switch for many over the years, but that's the variety that I use, and there are many forums online and textbooks or periodicals that are printed in this standard variety that has become in its own way a representative of the language today.
You mentioned that you teach it. Who are your students? Who's interested in learning it? Are they mostly from a background where their grandparents spoke it, or people who are interested in Spanish?
Sure. So at UCLA, after several years being there and working with people to teach the language ourselves, after going abroad to Israel and taking classes where they do offer at most universities the language, I started to teach different workshops. It was always on a workshop basis in Los Angeles. And most of the students actually were not Jewish. They were just fascinated by this language that had so much to do with, yes, Castilian Spanish had its base, but that incorporated so many other words and sounds from other languages representing the unique histories as well. But now that I teach it at Binghamton University, where I teach a course in the fall. It's a mini course, so to speak, where the students do receive credit, a small course because it's only for freshmen. And so this year we had a few students who were not Jewish, not Sephardic. One student was half Dominican and half Puerto Rican, and she spoke, she was interested in the language because she wanted to learn something new, and she spoke Spanish, but for her, the idea of Judeo-Spanish was very interesting, and, she was Christian. And a lot of times I noticed that, and another student that I had before at UCLA was Chinese, and no relation to Jewish culture, religion, or anything. So a lot of times people are just very fascinated to learn something new that exists. A lot of people have heard of Yiddish, but there are much fewer that have heard of Judeo-Spanish. So I think it's intriguing to a lot of people and to a lot of non-Sephardim. In my case, I'm not Sephardic, but there's something just very intriguing about this language. And for me, meeting the people, I always try to create opportunities where my students can meet speakers, native speakers of the language while they still exist, and know that this is a language that's still spoken in limited domains, but it represents a lot.
Tell us about the film. Tell us about the story of Morris Al-Bahari and how you found out about him.
Sure. So my colleague, Susanna Zoraisky, is an author, a polyglot, and now she works for Google. And 5 or 6 years ago, she contacted me. She had read something that was written up about my participation and my involvement in Ladino in Los Angeles. And she contacted me after reading the article. And she had spent some time in Sarajevo after the war there and working on different projects that had to do with the economic development. And she is Jewish, Ashkenazi, and she learned of the community, Sephardic community, and she met Morris Al-Bukhari, our protagonist of the film, over a decade ago. And he told her his story, and she remembered it. And she always thought, his voice has to be heard. I mean, it's so important to listen to these testimonies, to these stories, before it's too late. And many are documented, but for her, it was just his story was incredible. So she contacted me, and, you know, in academia, we typically write up papers and do things, but for us, we were discussing what could we do, should we write a paper about this story? But for us, it was so much more important to get the word out, to share with people visually, and so they could hear the music. And so that's when we decided to do a documentary. Neither of us have a background in film studies or whatnot, but we consulted with a number of people who do have backgrounds and who could help us, who could do the filming and whatnot. And we were able to receive a few grants to allow us to go to Bosnia in a few occasions to meet with not just Morris Al-Bukhari, but also the community of the last few speakers of the language. In Morris's case, he was born and raised in Sarajevo in 1930. He's still there today. And he spoke Judeo-Spanish as his mother tongue. That was the Sephardic community's mother tongue prior to World War II. But with World War II and the events of the Holocaust, most of the community perished, were killed. And at certain points, Morris survived, and the core members of his family also did as well. In many cases, Morris came across, whether it was an Italian colonel or a former music teacher, who did not speak Judeo-Spanish, but he was often able to use his Judeo-Spanish with speakers of other Romance languages in order to communicate. Since they wouldn't be able to speak necessarily Bosnian in certain places, he used Judeo-Spanish to help him advance and to communicate, essentially. And that helped him get to the next point in life.
Did you run into any special difficulties during the filming?
Susanna and I, we did a lot of planning beforehand. We had to get permits and sometimes permission from many people to do filming on certain days in certain places, especially the synagogue, to get permission from all these people to be willing to share their stories. Because obviously for many, including Morris, he told us that a lot of people, even in his family, did not know some of the things that he was about to tell us on film. In recording. So we took that into account. We tried to be very careful reviewing the questions because, again, as far as how do you interview someone, how do you interview a survivor of any genocide or in general, it's we had to do a lot of our own homework on that and think about a lot of these considerations. But while we were there, for example, my colleagues and co-director Susanna did speak Bosnian. So that helped us a lot with the groundwork and getting cameramen and getting a lot of the permissions. But while I was there, there's one scene in Saved by Language where we get the last four speakers of the language together to speak about their experiences. And we want to do that part exclusively in Judeo-Spanish. So that was interesting for me because I conducted that interview in Judeo-Spanish with them. I was in the background. I'm not in the film at that point, but I was asking them all the questions in the language. It was an interesting experience for me, not a problem, but to use Judeo-Spanish as a lingua franca, not knowing Bosnian. I got around Bosnia and Sarajevo knowing Judeo-Spanish, which is kind of a novel idea, right, considering the status of the language.
Yes, and it's also very heartwarming to be able to do that, isn't it?
It was nice. You know, I think the reason that I'm so intrigued and that I want to continue to help people share their stories and share their languages because, again, coming from a position that we're, you know, in academia, we have a platform that we're given where I feel very fortunate to have a platform to be able to teach and to educate and to really to work with speakers of the language who, as I mentioned earlier, oftentimes felt that their language was a jargon, you know, a mere dialect and all these connotations that go with it. But regardless, for these speakers, Judeo-Spanish was and is their mother tongue. This represents their experience and their family's experience. So working together, I think, is very important. And it's something that's, yes, like you said, it's heartwarming. And it becomes so much more than just an interview about the language. They share with me at times stories that are so personal, whether it's from family anecdotes or sayings or whatnot, to just enjoying being in the presence where they can actually use the language, see that someone younger is interested in it, and really take pleasure in that.
Where has the film been shown and to whom? Who's seen it and what kind of reception has it gotten?
Yeah, it's gotten a very warm reception, I think, which is nice for us. Susanna and I debated for a while entering the film festival market, which when we thought about this, we wanted to, you know, go to different film screenings or film festivals. But we thought that actually takes a lot of time, actually, when you would apply and find out months later whether your film was accepted. And for us, you know, the reason that we wanted to do this documentary was to share Morris's story. That was the most important thing for us. And Morris, you know, when we first started filming, was 79, 80 years old. His health has had some ups and downs since then. And when we finished the film a few years ago, we said, you know what, let's release this. Let's go to different communities first and see if there's interest, and we could organize events and do that, because we want Morris to be able to see this film before he no longer is able to. And I know maybe about a year or two ago, they finally screened the film in Bosnia. Suzanne and I were not able to go, but there was a lot of press. They were writing about him in the papers there. He was at the reception, the screening, with the other speakers of the language, and we communicated afterwards. And for us, I told Susanna that was the most beautiful thing that could come about this, speaking to him afterwards, where he was recognized for speaking this language that for so long he thought just had no value. But the film had screened at various places, either at conferences or community gatherings around the world, several places in the United States, of course, but also just a few months ago in Cuba, in Bulgaria, in Portugal, in Bosnia, in many different places. And Sephardic communities or non-Sephardic communities who have shown interest.
Well, I think even though it's about this language, I think that we all have a lot in common. I mean, it's also about the Holocaust, which we all have in common, and survival, and the survival of your culture. And I think that that's something that we, as Jews, all have in common somehow. Anyway, are you working on anything now? Do you have any plans for the future?
Yes, so right now, aside from continuing to promote and to talk about this documentary in particular, I continue to do interviews and continue to write about and publish about Judeo-Spanish, particularly from a linguistic perspective, to say who speaks the language, when do they speak it, where and why, and what's going on with the language today, because for many there's some beliefs that it's no longer spoken, and it still is. So I do a lot of speaking at different conferences to share my research, share my interviews with people, and hopefully that will lead to a book at some point sooner than later. To spread the word about this language.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
Again, for me, participation with the community is very important. Just a month ago, we organized a Judeo-Spanish celebration in New York City. The National Authority of Ladino started a few years ago to do a quote-unquote Day of Ladino or Day of Judeo-Spanish, which takes place in different communities at different points annually. And so we contributed to that in New York. For me, it's a pleasure to be in New York now, where I'm from originally, because having come from Los Angeles, to compare the communities, to kind of think about how each community represents and moves forward with their language. But I look forward to collaborating more with different communities, getting to know their stories, and hopefully doing my part again to help promote and to work with Judeo-Spanish speakers for whatever it is they need, but for all the ideas, for all the innovations, and you know, this idea of revitalizing or saving a language is a challenging one, but it's something that I look forward to addressing with the speakers themselves while we still are fortunate enough to have them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.